to the Art of Advisory podcast. My name is Kirk Bowman, and joining me is my colleague Hector Garcia.
In this podcast here today, we're going to interview Andrew Berg, a colleague of mine, a CPA, running a CPA and small business advisory firm out of Pennsylvania, but working with clients all over the U.S. Andrew's firm is called Berg Advisors, and they work with all sorts of industries, but they do have a newfound love for e-commerce. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Hector. Nice to see you. Kirk, hi.
Andrew, it's a pleasure.
So we'll start with the first question, Andrew. What is the best business advice you have ever received?
Wow, great question. I think the best piece of advice I've ever received was that you cannot make a bad decision because the decision is yours. And I think a lot of people overthink their decisions as to whether they are good or bad decisions. And one time I was overthinking something and somebody basically came to me and said, it's your decision. And when it's your decision, you can't make a bad decision because once you've made that decision, you got to move forward as if it was the right decision and not worry about whether it was the right or wrong decision.
Awesome, Andrew. Thank you for that. So let me ask you another question, if you don't mind. Let's get started with your story on how you work with a client called Death Wish Coffee. So Death Wish Coffee, this is a story that you told me last time we met in a conference. It's a company that sells coffee and it's all e-commerce. But I would love to hear your story about how you met them and how they catapulted you into the world of e-commerce.
Great, thanks. So Death Wish Coffee Company is located up in upstate New York, and they were in the running for to win a contest that Intuit was sponsoring for a Super Bowl commercial. They were at QuickBooks Connect 2016, and I happened to be there as well. I'm sorry, 2015. We were there as well, and was at the bar having a drink, talking just back and forth, and we were just became friends. And as we talked, I realized that he was in the running for this contest and that he was very, very concerned about what would happen to his business if he was to win. And we got to talking and back and forth, and we kind of exchanged some information and we went on our way. He went back to New York. I went back to Philadelphia. And about a day later, I got a phone call and he called me and said in a panic that he needs to talk to me, that he's very concerned about his business, and that in order for him to be able to talk to me, I was going to have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which was kind of odd. And I said, okay, fine. And found out at that time that he was going to be the winner of a Super Bowl commercial sponsored by Intuit. So he was concerned that the influx of business from this commercial was going to be great and that he wasn't really prepared. And he wanted to hire me as an advisor to help them from everything from getting the books prepared to valuing inventory to getting procedures in place and processes and just getting them ready for what might happen to this business. And we decided to take on a project. We thought it was a 3-month project to kind of get them started. And he agreed to what we were proposing to do and help him with his business. We basically decided we were going to act like outsourced CFOs for a 3-month period of time and get him ready. And day one, we realized that it was going to be very, very challenging because like many small businesses out there, he didn't understand his own records. So he had an outside accountant who was managing his books on an off-site server that he had no access to, was sending him reports that he didn't understand, and all of the information on it was incorrect. He didn't know this until I got those reports and started asking him questions, and he did not know the answers to a lot of these things. So we basically decided to reconstruct his books. We decided to take away functions that he was used to doing, like accounts payable, accounts receivable. We decided to put inventory steps in place. And instead of just doing a project to take over CFO, we actually took over the bookkeeping. We took over the accounting. We took over the CFO. We took over everything, basically. And anything that was financially related that he had concerns about, he basically turned over to us that we handled kind of on a virtual nature. And we drove back and forth to New York. It's a 4-hour drive, but he was in my office. We were at his office for a significant period of time leading up to the early February Super Bowl commercial that was going to be released. and we got them ready. And it was a huge undertaking. So one of the expertises my firm has is we help you with basically everything and anything. Most of it's financial related, but because we understand business, we kind of help people with all kinds of things that intertwine with what people think are financial, but aren't really. So for example, HR, and what are the policies you need to put in place now that you're going to have 30 people on staff instead of just your 4 or 5 people out of the garage? What do you need to do as far as employee manuals concerned? What do you need to do about workers' comp? What are the insurances you have to have in place? What about new marketing ideas? We literally helped him strip down the business and bring it back up within 3 months, and thankfully did, because his business has been tremendously more busy, significant. He's grown significantly. He went from a $4 million business, and in less than a year was at a $22 million business, and doing all of his revenue, basically 50% of his revenue was coming from Amazon sales, and 50% is coming from his sales on his website. And we went up there, we sat with him first day, and we put a map together of how he does business. Like, where does he buy from? How does he pay those people? How does he know how to enter that into inventory? How does he figure his gross margins? And we realized very early on that the owner loved doing marketing, was a marketing genius, had an amazing product, but did not understand business and small business finances. So things such as what are your margins were a question that we had to help him develop the answer to. So we would literally sit in the back and watch his coffee be manufactured and count how many hours were being spent or minutes were spent in each process until we developed how much it cost him to make a pound of coffee so that we knew his margin when he sold a pound of coffee. So that's how detailed we got. So we did so much for him in 3 months. And even today, this is probably 18 months later, I guess, more so, we still act as his outsourced CFO. So I speak to him once a week via video call. We talk about what's going on in his business. He asked me to take over significant challenges. So right now, we're in the middle of 4 different abnormal type projects related to the business that him and his team could not handle that my team is taking over and handling for him.
So if you don't mind, Andrew, let me unpack a little bit and rewind back, if you don't mind. I like to go back to how you landed the deal. Let's talk about that, because obviously once you build the trust and you have the client and they pay you your fee, whatever happens to be, and I'm sure Kirk would like to ask you about how you price such a thing. But I want to go back and you know, I'm sure there's a lot other consultants and accountants in the area where the business is. You guys are 4 hours away. What do you think helped you land the deal, or how did you add value as a consultant, or how do you sell them on the fact that you could help them upfront? So if you don't mind, maybe give us some secrets about, you know, what went on in that first conversation in the bar, or what led them to work with you.
So I think it really in the beginning came down to communication and availability. We just talked to him just like a normal guy. We weren't trying to discuss it as if we were trying to land a client. In fact, we weren't even trying to land a client. We were just talking and saying how amazing his brand seemed and how interesting his business seemed, and kind of were congratulating him. And in the process of having that conversation, you could see in his facial expressions that he wasn't really comfortable. So we would take bits and pieces of that conversation and dig in a little deeper, like, you do know your margins, right? You do know, you know, we would ask probing questions. And I think when we started asking probing questions, but on a very friendly level, I think he realized that the support that he was getting from his current advisor was nowhere near the support that he probably needed. So I think our communication was almost like, we're just having a conversation. You know, you want some free advice? Here's some free advice. Good luck. If you ever need to talk, please call me. And when we say that, we really mean it. We don't really mean, call me and I'm going to charge you. We really mean, we feel like we can help people and we're okay with giving away some free advice, because we feel like the advice we have is so good that in the back door, it might lead to business for us. So it was just a normal conversation. And then I think the piece that was the linchpin for this is that he called us on a Saturday, and I immediately got back to him on a Saturday and talked to him on his cell phone through my cell phone for over an hour on that Saturday. And I think he realized right away that not only did we have the advice that he could use, but that I was going to be as available to him as anybody was if it was right next door to him. So we broke down all the barriers and questions that somebody would have in the very, very beginning. Because I feel like all advisors out there, kind of selling's really, really hard. You know, everybody thinks that there's, you know, am I going to be good enough to be able to do this job? You know, how much will they pay me? You know, are they going to think my service is valuable? And sometimes you almost find a way to talk yourself out of a piece of business. And I think that in the confidence of selling, what we've basically done is we've kind of gone to people and say, we don't sell anything that we don't think we can do. And if I make a promise, I'm keeping it. I'm relentless. My team is relentless. And I know we push through walls. So if I tell somebody I'm going to do it, we are going to do it. So I don't ever feel like I'm selling something I'm not going to deliver. So when I tell somebody that it's an expensive price, they are absolutely going to get value from it. And if they don't feel like they got value, along the way, I'm going to have enough conversation to make sure that they feel like they're getting the value out of it. Because I grew up in a way that I feel like I cannot provide a binder of information to somebody and tell them good luck with it and charge them a high fee without being really, really hands-on and provide the service at a very, very deep and high level in order for me to feel comfortable charging that high price. So now I don't feel uncomfortable telling somebody that I would value price it at a high price because I know I'm going to deliver. And then what I do is look for quick wins early on in order to prove to somebody that I'm going to deliver. And once I have those quick wins, really, really easy after that for the client to believe that they're going to get the value they deserve. So we priced it out initially at a fixed fee pricing for 3 months. I didn't even know he was going to be my client. We just said, we're going to help you get ready. You keep your existing relationship. And I think 5 minutes in, when he sent me information to review, I was shocked. I was so blown away that somebody wouldn't know, or somebody in my profession would provide a service for a price at such a poor level. I was very, very upset and basically said to him, we're taking this on. And not only did we say we're taking it on, but for no additional cost that time, because I had already locked myself in a fixed fee. And I said, we'll figure it out when this is all over, knowing that when he saw the value, he'd want to sign up for more. So, you know, I think the best advice I can give out there for this value pricing piece of this puzzle is, you know, I always think you have to deliver more than what the person expects. And if you don't spend time up front to figure out what the client expects, you won't know if you provided one step more than what they expected. And if you do provide one step more than expected, never a problem with value pricing.
Andrew, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned this started with a bar conversation, and the initial goal essentially was, hey, we've got the potential here to grow our business exponentially. Nobody knew whether it was two, three, or more. You saw that as an opportunity for the customer, and you were simply having a conversation with him. But as you mentioned in your previous answer, you thought it was one thing, and then you got into it, and it was something else. Talk about a little bit more reconciling that difference. As you indicated, you were going to go ahead and do it because you wanted to follow through with the customer on what you had already delivered. But I think that's a fear that a lot of professional advisors have. How would you answer somebody who says, wow, I couldn't have done that?
Great question, Kirk. So I speak to a lot of professionals in my industry. I'm sure Hector does as well, and realizes that there are a lot of people in my industry that won't take that next step. Maybe the fear is, if I do it wrong, I'm going to lose my bread and butter client, or maybe I can't provide what they want, so I'm just going to stay away. And you know what I learned a long time ago? And I think I learned that most people in small business get into small business because they do something really, really great. And most get stuck doing something that they really, really don't do great. Financials, bookkeeping, you know, getting vendors straightened out, all the stuff that nobody wants to do when they start this business. But they don't know who to turn to. And they also don't know whether they can afford that service. So what I basically said along the way is, we can help. I just feel like we can help somebody in so many different ways. And instead of getting to a point with somebody where I'm like, here's what's going to cost. Sorry, I can't help you unless you sign this engagement or tell me you're going to pay this. We basically go in and sacrifice on our side a little bit in order to come in the back door with a lot more. And I think it goes a long way for a client to say, I'm going to do this because I really want to help you and like you. And I'm not going to do this just because I'm looking for a fee that I'm, and I think that's true. I mean, I'm running a business, don't get me wrong, but if I truly believe in what I do, then I know I'm going to make my fees in the end. So therefore I should not spend all my time saying, well, I'm not doing this unless I get the fee. So what we do instead is we sacrifice. And guess what? Sometimes, Kirk, it doesn't work. Sometimes we lose. And we learn from all of those losses, we learned something positive. Just like all those wins, we learned something positive too. And we learned some negative things too. And I think that what we learn the most is sacrifice is going to result in a longer term client for us at a very high value, more so than it would be us saying, here's the price, get started. And a lot of times the clients don't even know what you're doing anyway. So you're saying, here's what I'm going to do. And they're going to sign off on the price. If they don't know what you're going to do, all they're going to think about is I'm paying that high fee, but am I getting what I thought, what the client thinks they were getting out of the relationship? So my job is to figure out what they really want, not prove to them how good an accountant I am, because they don't know or care what I'm doing anyway. What they really want me to do is take their stuff, bring it to them, and explain to them how to use that information to be more profitable, how to be more efficient, how to make better decisions. So I spend all my time psychologically learning about my clients, their hopes, their dreams, their fears, their concerns, their everything. And we take that information along with what we do really well, and we build a customized solution to know how to communicate with the clients and know exactly what they want. So when we were talking to them at that bar, the truth is I was really concerned for him, and I didn't even know him. I just know that when I was talking to him, that I liked him a lot, that he was a really great guy. And when I heard what he's about to go through, I'm thinking, oh my God, what if something goes wrong? Some accounts might have just said, oh, well, too bad, good luck. I actually generally was concerned for him, even though I didn't know him. And I think that probably showed through in the conversation and then led to where we are today.
And if you don't mind, thank you, Andrew. That was a great story. If you don't mind, I'd like to unpack one comment you made about setting up expectations. And I personally am a strong believer that expectations rule the world of business. When someone is walking in with one thing in their mind and the salesperson gives them a different thing, it's unlikely that they'll be able to sell that customer something. But some customers come in with no expectations, but they come in maybe with a price or maybe some vague idea of what I want or what they want. If you don't mind, could you tell us about maybe some tips and tricks on how to set those expectations? Are there some key questions that you ask, or are there some key things that you're listening to or watching that they necessarily may not be saying verbally? Are there any specific tools, like is there like an expectation checklist? What how are some of those ways that you set those expectations up front during that discovery stage of dealing with the client?
So to me, the most important thing is whether they have good, clean bookkeeping that tells the story of the business on the books exactly as the business is. What that means is if I was to pick up the books and records and I wanted to learn about the business, I would not need to ask anybody a lot of questions to learn about the business. So for example, if I was to walk into a manufacturer and they had inventory and I can see inventory, but there's no inventory in the books, I know something's wrong. So to me, it's all about having clean bookkeeping and that the story of the business is told on the books exactly the way the business is. And that, by the way, happens to include making sure you do things the right way. And a lot of times we know in small business, people don't want to do things the right way because maybe they think there's a tax advantage to it or there's other reasons why somebody wouldn't. And I always look and say, you know, we can worry about mitigating tax down the road, but we can never help you make the right decisions if your books don't say exactly what's going on. So to me, the number one thing is, are the books accurate and do they tell the right story? If they don't, I already know from an expectation perspective that I have to spend a lot of time getting involved to get the book straightened out. Either my staff's going to do it or their staff's going to do it. So from that perspective, there's a conversation that occurs that basically is like, okay, who's going to do this work? Because I can't do all the advisory work that you really want me to do without clean books. And how is that going to be charged and paid? That's an easy conversation usually, because that's usually an hourly rate, hour conversation, kind of like we know how many bank accounts and credit card accounts and how long that takes. And that's kind of, that along with tax is usually a pretty easy conversation to have. But for me, it's all about getting those books clean. Once I have the idea that those books are going to be clean, all of the everything else then is all about advisory. What am I doing with this information, and what is it the client really wants with this information? And from that perspective, Hector, that's all psychological. It's all psychological, in my opinion. It's all the psychology of business. Everybody who gets into business, especially entrepreneurs, have hopes, fears, dreams. Everybody has it. It's my job to figure out where they are today, where they want to be tomorrow, how quickly they want it to be there tomorrow, and be able to use the information to tell them whether or not they're on the right path or not to being able to make it. I also need to know what they fear. If I don't know what they fear, how am I going to know how to communicate with them properly? Because if they fear cash flow, then the first thing I want to know is, that's the first thing I want to make sure that they understand, is what their cash flow is and how to understand cash flow when I'm not around, so that they're not fearful of making decisions because of cash. So I want to know their fears too, because from my perspective, it helps me design all of the systems and customization that happens with the client in order to just have the conversations go the way they want. You know, I learned, you asked me earlier, like, what's the one piece of advice somebody said to me that, you know, was a good piece of advice. So this isn't necessarily number one advice, but somebody, I read somewhere that when you're left with your own thoughts, 4 out of 5 thoughts are naturally negative. So I'm thinking about that and I'm saying, wow. So when the business owner who's all alone on an island or feels alone on the island is thinking about the business or thinking about what's going on, 4 out of 5 thoughts are negative. So what I don't want to do is add to that. The last thing I want to do is go in and provide another, because they're gone. Meaning, I start the conversation and that conversation's over in their head no matter what. So my job is to understand them and understand how to design my services so it's going to make it all positive conversations. So I look for, and I said this earlier, quick wins. That's my biggest tip, is quick wins. So what's a quick win? Somebody prepared a tax return wrong last year. I notice it right away. Amending the tax return would potentially give them a refund. That's a really fast, quick win. Clients love that stuff. Or client needs refinancing, is having trouble getting their books and records in order, or doesn't know a relationship to get that financing. I land that, get that, help that business straight. Very, very fast, quick win. And you get those quick wins or those drops in the bucket, really, really hard for them to break those drops in the bucket quickly. So from there, it's just a building stage. At that point, it's build, 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 build. And you know what? And I know, Hector, I know you're this way too a lot, because we had a lot of conversation. I know how you do with your business. All of my clients are personal to me. They're all personal. When I mean personal, it's like my own money's in my pocket. It's like their money is in my pocket. And it, excuse the language, pisses me off when I see somebody who's my client being taken advantage of. And I am relentless in wanting to help that client succeed. So I treat all of my clients like I'm the owner of all these little businesses. And I tell my staff to treat them the same way. And when they do, it's so easy to help the client when you think it's your own money.
So if I understand that correctly, one of those quick wins is to go through the books and potentially see some expenditures that they're, maybe places where they're overspending. The typical accountant is really mostly concerned with making sure that those expenditures are recorded correctly or that they're going to the right category. But what you're saying is you take it one step further and you maybe do some investigative reports, say, hey, you know, does a business this size need to spend $3,000 a month in office supplies? Is that what you're saying? Is that the type of work that you're doing?
100%, Hector. Absolutely. Find problems, but bring them a solution. So it's, why are you spending so much money for your payroll services? Why don't we talk to somebody else who I know is 50% cheaper? Or, hey, I noticed your cell phone bills are X. Are you aware that Verizon or somebody else is running a promotion now where you can get it and get it at this price? Because a lot of these business owners are so busy doing what they do, they don't know some of that outside stuff. So you're right. That's a great win. Or you bring somebody in as a relationship person that can maybe help them do what they are already needing and do it cheaper, like web hosting or marketing or, yeah, anything. You know what? It's like you're running your own business. And we look at every line, and every time we see something that we think is something that's egregious, not only do we tell the client that, but we want to go in and say, here's what I think you should do. Because there's nothing worse than somebody giving somebody homework, right? I don't give them homework. What I want to do is give them homework and say, here's what I would do. And a lot of times they're like, well, can you take care of that for me? Now, most accountants would be like, wait, they want me to call and take care of that? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. The reason I want to do it is because it keeps putting that bond in place from an advisory perspective for a client that you just is unbreakable. You can't get that everywhere you go. So even though another account might be cheaper than me, they'll never get that service level from any other account. And that's kind of how we try and manage all of our relationships.
And Andrew, if I hear you correctly, you're spending quite a bit of time, let's call it off billable hours, building relationships with other service providers, sounds to me. Like you actually have to go out and know a good banker, a good, you know, commercial lender, a web designer. I mean, that sounds to me that this is something that you're doing. And you're creating this sort of army of other advisors and consultants to tap into their knowledge when maybe you see something in the client's books. Maybe you're not an expert in web design or web hosting, but you can ask another advisor, hey, this guy's paying this much in web hosting and this is what they do. Is that right? Is that accurate? And then they usually will obviously welcome the lead and try to help your client. So what you're telling me is you're spending a significant amount of time outside of your standard accounting business building relationships and learning other aspects of the business. Is that correct?
Significant. It is huge. Yeah. I don't even really track my billable hours anymore because most of it is it's hard to track. So if I'm building a relationship with somebody who I know I'm going to maybe ask my help a client of mine, what am I billing it to? So I spend a lot of time promotional, trying to understand what's out there, learning the best technologies that are available, and understand what is available, not just for me, but for my clients. So yeah, it's a scary thing. You know, I talk to a lot of other accountants in the industry, and I tell them what they do, and some of them are like, you do what? And I don't know if I would do it any other way, to be honest with you. I love it. I think that's the way the small business owners think accounting firms are supposed to run. And when they go to an accounting firm, I think they're generally surprised that they're getting more boilerplate and not advice about how to run their businesses and solutions. And I am kind of trying to be a little bit on the forefront of what I think is a change in our industry now to being more about providing advice and not being afraid to go out on a limb and tell somebody, here's what I think you should do. That being said, a lot of homework has to be put in place to make sure that what you're going to tell them is going to be right and it's going to work. And when it doesn't work, you better be available to pick up the phone and or in your car to go solve the problem immediately. Because when it goes wrong, the last thing you can do is run away and pretend it wasn't your problem. Because that'll break a relationship immediately. So yeah, Hector, a lot of time. But again, I feel like that's what's supposed to happen in our industry. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. Makes it fun. I get up in the morning. I don't know what I'm going to do every day. So it's actually kind of enjoyable.
Andrew, it's interesting. You are kind of talking from the vantage point of you made the decision to go in this direction with your business, to pursue the advisory, to be more of a consultant to your clients. That's a transition that takes a while. And as you've alluded to, a lot of times that transition starts with billable hours. People moving from that business model to something different. One of the biggest objections I hear from accountants and bookkeepers who maybe realize, hey, this is a transition we need to make, even if for no other reason than they're at a conference and they hear somebody speak who says this is where the industry's going. But one of the biggest objections I hear is this idea of clean books. And you talked about how important that was. In fact, with this customer, this coffee manufacturer, you mentioned we got to get clean books first. And so the objection is, how do I handle that clean books? Because I think everybody goes, yeah, once we get to clean books, then the value I can provide is to help them understand the story, right? Either to teach them how to read the numbers themselves, or I'll read them for them if that's the case. How do you handle that initial step? Because a lot of advisors feel like that's a big risk. And I'm getting the impression from you, that's not a big risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we still track our hours here. I track my hours by in my office by staff, by client, and we only do it for the purposes of comparison to what we propose as our value billing. So we have that information available. It's not used. We do not bill any clients out on an hourly basis at all. But we use it for tracking purposes in order to update our relationships if necessary, if we start seeing things going one direction or the other. So we have that information. And what we basically do is, in that clean book stage, we have what's called, and Hector used the terminology earlier, discovery phase. So we have what we call as this discovery phase. And we tell our clients, in the discovery phase, which could last anywhere from 30 to 90 days, in some cases more, we are going to be billing you in this fashion. The goal is, within that discovery phase, to get to a point where we know all of this is done, and then we can move on. So in that discovery phase, we are normally value billing that client, but we're tracking our hours and telling the client along the way if there's anything going askew. But honestly, I've been doing this a long time, and I feel like when you ask the right questions up front and you do enough digging in the very, very beginning of discovery phases, you can kind of guesstimate what the right price is going to be for this. So to me, sending a bill out that says, here's how many hours I worked, here's what I did, it's kind of like, I don't even think the client likes it. So I try to stay away with it because I don't even want the client to get that bill in order to pick up the phone or call me and say, what was this for? So I try to stay away from it and say, you're going to have clean books. This is what the cost is going to be. This is what we're estimating the amount of hours it's going to take you, take us. And I'll let you know along the way whether or not we're going significantly askew. If we don't go significantly askew, Kirk, we don't bill it. It is what it is. It's a promo and we'll get it back down the road somewhere. We're not trying to get every single hour out of this. And but keep in mind, even that discovery phase, we're looking for all the, like I said to Hector earlier, all the quick hits, the quick fast hits, and all the value type items that we can start putting in place. So believe it or not, what we have is a team of mine cleaning up the books, a team of mine looking at value, a team of mine looking at quick hits. And we're kind of like surrounding this client from all different angles, looking at them all the time within this discovery phase to try and get them up to speed as quickly as possible, all within this arrangement. Again, the number one goal is that the client thinks that they are getting amazing value for what they're paying. And if it's my job, and we, by the way, we score it in my office. In my office, we have a client happiness meter that we keep track of, and we use that to determine whether we think that the client thinks they are happy with our service. And we use a lot of different ways to figure that out. And our job is to always make sure that the client thinks that they are getting value out of what they're paying. And I ask lots of probing questions to the clients to make sure of it. But just to get back to one other thing, I thought you were going a different direction with this question. I just want to say, so this decision we've made has come over a lot of years of doing this. I've been doing public accounting for 25 years now. And, you know, this didn't just overnight come up and say, well, this is what we're going to do. Probably the last 10 years, I've noticed a change towards more where I am a little bit at a time. But the big piece of the puzzle for me was I looked at when I was 32 years old, which is about 19 years from now ago, which I don't want to age myself, but it is what it is. 49. So I said that when I'm 52 years old, I want to have a place that my children, who would be getting out of college at that point in time, would say, wow, that's a place I would love to work. Not that I would ever hire them, not that they want to be in accounting, but they would even look at it and say, this is the type of place I want to work. And knowing where the type of person was going to be 20 years later, technological, young, flexible, not wanting to do a lot of stuff that I've done over many of the years, I made a conscious decision to start to structure my practice towards the type of staff member that was going to be available to me at this time frame, with the assumption that technology was going to be big, which was a good assumption that happened. It ended up happening. And we wanted to be ready to attract the right type of staff member. So you know what? I'm not really even looking for people who are absolute big time CPAs to come join me. Sometimes it's not even the right person. I need somebody who wants to be an entrepreneur and business advisor, and I can teach them bookkeeping. And there's certain things I can't teach them because they're not CPAs, but the reality is we're moving away from tax even, because that's even very big, it's more compliance-based, more towards advisory, only because that's what I think everybody wants. And I'm trying to move away from what everybody needs and moving more towards what everybody wants.
I think that maybe where Kirk was getting at, which you alluded to, Andrew, as well, is the challenge that the most people in our industry have is taking the quote-unquote hit on just making sure the books are clean in order to move on to advisory. So I think the challenge is that we see clean books as one service and then advisory as another service. And I've interviewed a few of our colleagues and accounting professionals that have mixed practices, like myself. I have a mixed practice. I have a bookkeeping arm, a tax preparation arm, a technology arm, and an advisory arm. And a lot of folks that have this mixed practice, including myself, we're going through this challenge where what we want to do is provide advisory all day long. What we want to do is feel that we are part of the client's businesses, help them grow, and have that encouragement every morning to say, yes, I'm going to give all my heart, all my body, all my effort to that particular client. But in order to do so, they have to pay a significant amount. I mean, almost at the partner level, right? Like if you become a partner of their business. But I think what he was alluding to, what Kirk was alluding to, is some firms are making the transition where they're saying the bookkeeping services and the taxes, those are free. We don't charge for that. We charge for advisory, and they're part of our advisory service. And that's kind of like what you've done. It sounds like that as long as you can give the advisory that this particular client needed, which is get over the hump of going from $5 million in sales to $20 million in sales overnight because of a Super Bowl commercial, and then branding recognition where they're getting even sales through Amazon, possibly a physical growth of warehouse and inventory. I mean, all these moving parts are happening, and kudos to your client for preambling or seeing the writing before it came, knowing that this is going to be a messy process. Most people would dream of a free Super Bowl commercial and would dream and think that going from $5 million in sales to $20 million in sales, it's just magical free money. And it's not. It's actually quite the opposite. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hiring, a lot of growth. So I think what Kirk was alluding to is that you somehow figure out the formula that the clean books or the tax returns, what you call the compliance, what we call compliance, is something that you don't even have to charge for when you are charging a significant amount for the advisory piece. And the advisory piece is not hourly work. Like, you literally give one piece of advice, it could mean $1 million in their pocket. I mean, it is that powerful what one piece of advice can be. So you can't bill that by the hour. You bill it with this big flat fee. So you could potentially charge, a million times more than you traditionally charge by just giving value-adding advice. But like you said, you have to take a hit and do the compliance work and almost not charge for it, or charge so little that it's not a barrier. Kirk, is that kind of what you were getting at?
Exactly. I think it's a mind shift. And for Andrew, when I hear you discuss it, it's an integral part of the way you think now. Mm-hmm. But for somebody else who's approaching this where you were several years ago, it's still a big barrier. And so you made the point that I was driving toward, which is you basically realize, clean books is something the customer needs, but they don't see having clean books in and of itself as valuable. So you're going to help them take that next step and say, what you really want is to understand the story of your business. And you may need me to teach you the language that story is being told in. And by the way, to get there, we're going to need some clean books. And so we're just going to do that for you because that's what you need. It's mm-hmm. just like, you know, a painter coming in and saying, hey, well, to paint that 13-foot ceiling, we're going to need a ladder.
Yeah, and it's I feel like we provide bookkeeping services to clients because they have a hard time finding somebody who can keep clean books. If they had somebody who was really, really good, and or I knew somebody who wasn't part of my firm who was really, really good, I'd be more than happy to have somebody else do that work. All I want is clean books so I can get it, figure out the story, and then help them understand their business. So to me, the bookkeeping side of my product, my practice, is kind of like a, you know, we do it because our clients can't find somebody better. And I have really good bookkeepers and they can do a great job. And we do that. But like Hector and you both said, it's something that it's really not the revenue-based model of our business. It's really all about advisory. Everything here is about getting to the point of discussing with the client what to do next or what's going right or what's going wrong. And unfortunately, in order to do that, we have to do tax returns. We have to do sales tax filings. We have to do bookkeeping. We have to do accounting. We have to do depreciation. I mean, there's all this stuff that has to be done. But all of that gets done only in order for us to get to the point of sitting down and saying, okay, what do we do? Because that's what the client's really hiring us for. So I don't want to call it a necessary evil because that's probably a little unfair because certainly I have a lot of really good bookkeepers here and a lot of people pay me for that service and it's really, really important. But the reality of the situation is we provide it only because we want to help and the clients are have a hard time finding the right help.
Andrew, thank you so much. That was absolutely fascinating. Thank you for telling us the story about your client and your practice. I'm going to ask you one last question so we can wrap things up. And that question is, from a direct advice you have given to your clients, what is the best outcome that your clients have received from that direct advice? It could be this particular client or any client that you've had over the years.
So especially in businesses that buy and sell a product, the number one piece of advice I tell everybody is you got to know your margin. If you don't know your margin and you think you're going to grow your business, you could actually put the business under. So you better know your margins. And one of the best things that I found in working with some of my clients is we were able to determine that by one of our clients was outsourcing their some of their production, their manufacturing, and it was costing them $2 more per pound to have it manufactured outside as compared to bringing it in-house. And that equipment to do it in-house and people were going to be, you know, maybe $100,000 or something like that. I forget the numbers top of my head. But the $2 savings was over 1 million pounds a year. And when I realized it was $2 a pound and realized that they were manufacturing 1 million pounds a year, that was a really easy conversation to have with the client and say, whoa, 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 we got to bring this back in-house no matter what. So it's kind of a general thing. Know your margins. You got to know them cold. It's a pain in the ass, but people like you and me, Hector, will get under in shelves and on top of shelves and dig into machines to figure out every single penny because it's so important to know your margins in that type of business. So that's the best advice I gave and the best outcome they have, which was a humongous savings of money. Really big.
Thank you, Andrew. Kirk, any last words about this interview?
I just want to point out how Andrew's taken a holistic view to his business. He didn't talk about just one part of it, the accounting or payroll or inventory or something else. He talked about it from a holistic perspective. He determined, this is how I want to run my business. This is how I want to serve my customer. What's it going to take to get there? In other words, he wasn't looking at it from a standpoint of the glass half empty. He was looking at it from the standpoint of the glass half full. And I want to specifically point out with the clean books issue, he also sees it from the glass half full perspective. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons you can take away from this interview is how do you change your mindset so that you're taking a holistic approach and you're looking at it from a positive perspective with the customer's best interest as the paramount importance.
Could I add one more thing? I just want to say one more thing. And Hector, you know this. I think from a accountant's perspective, I don't want to say CPA because a lot of people in our industry now aren't CPAs, and I don't think you need to be. I think it's all about education. Educating our client ahead of time, and that does, sometimes you can't charge for that. Educating your client about it after the fact, advisory, and I think everybody, including me, I want to learn something new every day. It's all about education. And once you realize that when your people are, your clients are listening to you in the education in the beginning proactively and education in the end, I think it's really easy to figure out how to charge people. People don't mind paying when they feel like they're getting value and they're being educated. So we've made a conscious decision to be educators, Kirk, is what we've done. We are educating our clients one step at a time how to be better business people. That's basically the best way I could say it.
That's amazing. I agree 100%. Andrew, thank you very much for joining. And Kirk, it's a pleasure as always.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
Take care, Andrew. See you, Hector.
Thanks. Bye.